Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly program questioning New York State leaders on a variety of issues. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution of the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org. And NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength is Not for Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.
Welcome to the Capital Connection. I'm Alan Chartok. Our guest today is the ace investigative reporter of the Albany Times Union, Jim Odato, who covers New York State government, including an influential weekly column for the Albany Times Union. Jim Odato, I know how busy you are. Thank you so much for coming in and being part of the show.
It's good to be here.
Well, we have so much to talk about in state politics, but, you know, let's start about the one thing that will get people's blood boiling more than anything else. Pay raises. It's fascinating the way they do this. So perhaps you could explain it.
Well, you know, the pay raise for lawmakers and for key commissioners and things like that, there have not been any raises since 99. And
when a good thing, I say.
Yeah, well, a lot of people might say that. You know, there are pros and cons to the idea of improving or increasing raises to elected leaders and public servants. And we will be hearing a lot of the arguments pro and con in the near future, I have a feeling. Because when the lawmakers return to Albany, probably after the election, they have the cover to give themselves pay raises or consider.
This is what we call the lame duck session.
Yeah. So when that happens, you know, we'll hear the pros and cons for that. As you probably know, the lawmakers are paid $79,500 as a base. Yes, several assembly Democrats, because there aren't a lot of leadership posts and chairmanships and things like that to hand out, are actually making the base. And they greatly would like to improve upon that. The people who are in leadership posts, there are all kinds of, you know, leadership posts, you know, whip and chairman of, for instance, the education committee, they get a lot of extra dough. So a lot of these people are approaching $100,000 a year in salary. But these raises haven't occurred since 99. They think it's time. You know, the state is in a situation in which the administration has commissioners who make less than the deputy commissioners or acting commissioners. In many cases, it's a pay loss if you ascend to the commissioner position, because those positions are fixed in terms of what the compensation is. And it's a weird situation. I mean, could you imagine if you made less than your deputy? So,
that is the case several years when somebody here goes out and sells underwriting and gets a commission.
It happens. It does happen.
I'm all for it.
It happens in corporations a lot of times. Yeah. Salespeople, because of commission, sometimes can make more.
Sure.
But regardless, we're going to hear this conversation. But, you know, at the same time, if you are in the community, as a matter of fact, I just came from the gym and I was talking to a fella and I said, "You staying in shape?" And he said, "Yeah, it's easy to stay in shape when you don't have a job. I'm here all the time." And there are still a lot of people looking for work. The Times Union had a job fair a couple of days ago, and all these people are coming in, and it's sad. You know, they're $8 an hour jobs, and that's pretty much all they're competing for $8 an hour jobs. It's still probably not a politically popular idea to consider giving yourself pay raises for
a
part-time
job. See, what makes me
job.
Crazy about that part-time job thing is some of them say it's a part-time job, some of them say it's in fact a full-time job for them, and depending on what the moment calls for,
They'll
say that. Now, but in the meantime, you know, they're being criticized because they along with the governor, they absolutely refused to raise the minimum wage in New York State. So here they are refusing to raise the minimum wage a dollar or so. But at the same time, they're saying we want to give ourselves a raise. That doesn't compute, does it?
Well, you know, the Assembly Democrats are eager to raise the minimum wage. It's the other house has been reluctant to do that. And the governor has not really pushed for it to date. But obviously, this is something that could be negotiated in exchange for a pay raise. Typically, something else happens. The last time it was during the Pataki administration. Exactly. The last time was a pay raise with charter schools. And so charter schools were introduced and expanded as a result of a pay raise back in 99. And so this time around, what does the governor want? Does he want, you know, campaign finance reform? Does he want minimum wage? Will there be something that could, you know, bridge the gap so that they get a deal? It's possible, because I have a feeling that senators wouldn't mind a pay raise either, even though the Times Union called every senator in the state a few weeks ago and asked these senators, what do you think about a pay raise? And almost none of them would comment. And those who did, many of them said, no, we're not in favor. And we had one or two Democrats who said, yeah, we think it's a good idea. As a matter of fact, one of them said they thought it should be fixed at $135,000, which is quite a pay raise. But, you know, for downstaters, $79,500, if that's their base and that's all they're bringing home, is a modest amount. But by the same token, these lawmakers are in positions in which when they go to work in Albany, they get per diems. They get a lot of money to stay in Albany, to cover their costs, $165 a day or so, to cover, you know, room and board. And so, you know, it's an unusual job. It's an unusual situation in that they have to wait for the politically ripe time to finally strike and give themselves raises. This could be the year.
Let's talk a little bit about the famous tiffs that have now been happening between the New York Times and Governor Cuomo, the Albany Times Union and Governor Cuomo. It all comes down to something called the archives. Maybe you could make this simple for all of us who are listening. What's happening?
Well, it's not really a tiff. It's certainly a bit of a wrestling match, I guess. But the Albany Times Union did something that, you know, a lot of newspapers do. They foiled or requested under the law the opportunity to look at records that were sent to the New York State Archives for the 4 years of Andrew Cuomo's attorney general tenure. And the modest number of documents that have been provided by the former attorney general for archives were screened in advance by representatives of Andrew Cuomo, now the governor, whose office does not possess those documents. Those documents belong to the attorney general's office. Currently, the attorney general is Eric Schneiderman. Eric Schneiderman delivered boxes of documents to the archives. They become the custody of the archives, not the governor's office. And so somehow the governor's office was allowed, under a cooperation between the archives and the attorney general's office, to pre-screen documents before they were going to be made public. The Albany Times Union got to see about 10 boxes of documents.
10 boxes compared to hundreds, maybe thousands of boxes from the Spitzer Attorney General administration.
That's right. So there could be more boxes coming, but right now there were 10 boxes available to us of the many more that were provided to the archives. And in those 10 boxes, there were very modest amount of information that couldn't be readily available just by Googling or going to the back office of my office and looking at reports, because they had been pretty closely screened already. But there were some documents in there that were sort of interesting, and we looked at them and once we were allowed to. And Jimmy Vielkind and I copied some of them, and we paid 25 cents a page, went home, and the next time we showed up at the archives, we were told we can't see any of the boxes, because they're being reviewed again because certain documents were allowed to be seen in error. So
we can assume the Cuomo administration found out that you had been nosing around in those boxes, and then down comes the edict, take them out of circulation.
Yes, that's, you can not only assume, it's a fact.
Yeah.
What happened is that somehow archives got the word to representatives of Andrew Cuomo that certain documents were not only seen but copied. And some of these documents, upon further review by these people, were determined to be too sensitive for public scrutiny. So now the Times Union appealed, had already planned to appeal the fact that a number of documents had been withheld, not just the documents that we saw and photocopied. So now the documents we saw and photocopied were removed. One box was totally taken away from us, and anything that was remotely interesting in any of the other remaining nine boxes suddenly weren't there anymore when we finally got the opportunity to see them again.
Who done it?
Well, who did that was the press officer for the governor, Josh Flasto, and the special counsel for the governor, Linda Lacewell, who had come over with him from the attorney general's office, had screened these documents one more time. Linda had already been there previously based on information that was gleaned from me foiling for the sign-in sheets for the research room. You could see who had signed in and when, and she had been there several times even before we got to see the documents. And then she returned with Josh Flasto right after we photocopied some documents.
Yes, but you had one piece of information, one sheet of paper, which talked about, I hesitate to even get into it again, the famous Troopergate incident, which is where troopers being used for political purposes. Andrew Cuomo was investigating his predecessor, Elliot Spitzer, and David Paterson.
Right.
And that piece of paper, which you already had now disappeared.
Right. That document was multiple pages at the moment. I can't remember exactly, five or six pages. Mm-hmm. And it was a memo that Linda Lacewell had done some almost a month after the report you're referring to came
out.
Yeah, in July of 2007, Attorney General Cuomo's first of three reports that dealt with state police came out. And that's
Andrew Cuomo.
Yes.
Because there's so many attorney generals in the story.
Yeah, Attorney General Andrew Cuomo.
Yes.
His first of three during his tenure reports concerning state police came out. And a month later, this memo had been written. And the memo concerned flights that Senator Bruno had taken on the state aircraft and the investigation into these three of 10 flights that he had taken in 2007, which had been one of the things that was being investigated as well in this first report. And so this is a memo as to what they did, who they talked to verify whether the trips were state business or not state business.
Exactly.
And it dealt with, they talked to a certain lobbyist and the lobbyist's client who had met with Senator Bruno on the days he took the airplane to New York City. What did they talk about? What did it concern? And
in other words, state business is allowable,
right,
but political business is not.
Right. And so the determination as to whether he really took the flight to New York City on the state aircraft legitimately. And in each case, it was determined that the trip passed the litmus test. And the litmus test was pretty broad at the time. In other words, in many cases, he was there and the state business was 15 minutes. And then on the same day, he had a political event to attend as well. And so the document was interesting. And we had it photocopied. And suddenly it was removed. And
wasn't that stupid to take it out after you had it already?
Well, we put it up. We ended up putting it up on the
web.
But
didn't they tell you not to do that? Didn't they? So wasn't there sort of an inference that you should not use what you already had, that they had already pulled out of the files?
They had discouraged us from doing that. Yes.
Yeah.
And they would have preferred.
How would they discourage you? Yell at you or scream at you and say, "We'll have your behinds if you do this."
I wouldn't say it was a yelling match or anything like that. But they were. I think they had their own point of view on this, in terms of whether. From their perspective, they thought there were confidential sources that were being given up and things like that. But this document dealt with lobbyists and their clients. Lobbyists already lobbyists already disclose their clients because it's required in this state. And many of these trips were known about. I mean, many of these lobbyists had come forward in 2007 and said, hey, oh, by the way, that trip was okay because I met with Senator Bruno and we talked about, you know, a prospective legislation or whatever. So anyway, it was an indication of just what they consider too sensitive for the world to see and how we disagree.
Okay, but wait a second. Isn't this the same Andrew Cuomo who said in the campaign and said afterwards that we're going to have the most transparent administration of all governors of all time, and now they're fighting to take stuff out and comb these archives for information? And by the way, nobody can quite figure out what was so sensitive about those pieces of paper that you had originally gotten a hold of. It seemed to be, you know, pablum.
Well, other documents that were taken away, Ellen, were records, were actually the daily calendars of Ellen Bybin, who at the time was serving the Attorney General as a public corruption or public officer violation bureau. And the calendar was, you know, like your calendars might say, you know, noon tennis with Jim Odato, or 1 o'clock, you know, meeting with source. So the whole document was taken away. Several of these calendars were taken away in the final screening. We had seen them initially. They were in there, and then they were gone. And just think about it. You don't have to provide an entire document to the world if there is confidential stuff in there. You can redact stuff. You can black it out and then put it back in. They took the entire document. Not only did they take the whole document, they took the whole box that the document existed in with a lot of other extraneous stuff away. So anyway, my point of view is that the Freedom of Information Law allows for redactions and withholdings, and there's all these exemptions in terms of what is allowed or what can be allowed for the world to see and not. The trouble is they always seem to err on the side of yanking this stuff. They never err on the side of letting people see it. In other words, there are a lot of things that you can use attorney-client privilege or attorney work product, or there's all kinds of exemptions under the FOIL law. You can choose to apply that. You don't have to. You can say, you know what? You know, this is an attorney-client work product, but you know, the case is closed. There's nothing in here that the world doesn't already know. Let's keep it in.
Especially when you think of the concept of the Attorney General of the state of New York, in this case, Governor Cuomo now, whose client is who? You know, you could say the client is state agencies or commissioners, but you can also say we're paying the bill and we're the client.
Yeah. Well, think about this for a minute, too. If you are a historian, and not just a journalist or a nosy, you know, New Yorker, but a historian trying to do a biography on Andrew Cuomo.
And you want, we know two are happening right now.
There are at least two. And you want to understand a little bit better his years as Attorney General. So you go to the New York State Archives, this repository of knowledge and history and documents. If you if things progress as they are starting out in terms of the documents that are going to be available for public viewing in the archives for the 4 years of Andrew Cuomo's Attorney General's tenure, and if it continues this way for the years that he's governor, a trip to the archives is going to be kind of a waste of time.
Now, when you went to the archives, I got to ask you something. Yeah. We're running out of time here. When you went to the archives, I'm thinking of, you know, all the president's men. Mm. Did somebody leave a note in your New York Times in the morning or in your Albany Times Union saying, you better get down there and look at this stuff?
No, it was nothing
just,
like
you
that.
Just
no.
Decided to do it?
No. As a matter of fact, Jimmy in particular was trying to figure out when records from the Attorney General's era were going to show up there, and he was asking questions. And he found out, yes, the first 40 boxes had already been delivered. So we put in a FOIL for it. And, I mean, it's just basic.
So
knowing
could this
it's
just
there.
Be paranoia? Now, this Ellen Bybin has a different position, assuming that, you know, she is now the chief agent for the governor in terms of public corruption, isn't she?
Yeah, she's Ellen Biben is the executive director of the Joint Commission on Public Ethics now, and she was for a time the inspector general. So she and others who worked for the then Attorney General Cuomo have joined him in his current administration. Yes.
Now, a couple of things about that. I've thought that, you know, if they had just shut up, this would not have risen to this kind of thing. So they're in a sort of a war. It seems to me they've alienated the New York Times, I believe. At least this is my assessment of what's going on. They have certainly given you guys, the paper of record of the Capital Region, you know, a hard time. They have turned what is nothing gate into file gate coming out of trooper gate. And I don't know what the brilliance of that was.
Well, they have a press strategy, and it is they have taken an aggressive posture. But, you know, in terms of alienating, I wouldn't say that. I mean, you can't really take this stuff personally. You can't go home at night saying those, you know, that was really crummy, and, you know, and use it against them the next day or something like that. You can feel bad about it. It's disappointing. But they have taken an aggressive posture, and they tend to be less on the defensive side and more on the offensive side when they respond to things like this. It's just a strategy. It's a strategy that seems to work for them because look at the popularity numbers of the governor right now.
That's true. No question he's a very popular governor, but things change. Everybody knows Governor Cuomo has a lobby group, a major PAC that has been supporting his incentives here called the Committee to Save New York. And now we only have 2 minutes, so you have to make it compact. But what's going on with finding out who the people were who gave the money to be in that PAC?
Well, you know, we kind of know a little bit about who's giving money to that PAC, but or that entity. But thankfully, the Joint Commission on Public Ethics is going to require the veil to come down.
And that's the very same Ellen Biben, who is now in charge of that, saying, okay, now everybody, from now on, the veil's off, you got to, but the Committee to Save New York, all the millions they collected, that doesn't count.
Well, the thing is, we're not going to know in going back.
Right.
You know, there's already been millions of dollars spent by this committee to support the governor's initiatives in education campaigns or, marketing campaigns, whatever you want to call them. We will not be able to find out, it seems, unless we're quite lucky, who paid for what, who contributed to what. But prospectively, going forward next year, under a new a decision, not by Ellen Biben, but by the board she serves, the commissioners, who just voted to require this kind of disclosure going forward, not just for the Committee to Save New York, but all kinds of groups like that.
By the way, from now on, you all have to do it, except in the spirit of it, we won't tell you who gave the money before.
Yeah. Yeah. The thing is, it's prospective. It's not looking back.
I hear you. Yeah. And you're a nice guy and you're being very careful. Mm-hmm. But I think it doesn't pass the stink test. But what does pass the stink test is your willingness to come in and talk to us, Jim Odotto. I have so much respect for what you and your colleague, Jimmy Vilkind, have been doing. You've been breaking stories. It's been picked up by news media all over the state and in some cases around the country. And we thank you for your hard work and we thank you for being here.
See you again.
The Capital Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. Ian Pickus is producer of The Capital Connection, a production of WAMC, Northeast Public Radio in Albany. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare online at nysut.org. And NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength is Not for Hurting campaign. Online at nyscasa.org.